several trees,
yeah,
and then another bunch, and then way beyond y'all, there's two oaks. You see the top of them, and then way beyond, you see some more pine. It goes beyond them oaks there.
Yeah.
In other words, this little, see that little green spot, y'all, about the size of an automobile?
Yeah. Right on this land?
And no, it goes right up that to it.
To it.
Right to it. And it follows that grade. Well, part of the way up, it goes over that grade and then all back down that bottom, near about back to that Orange Lake Brush Lot Road.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know that
bottom.
Land out there. This is the only road I know.
And it goes here. Where you see this temple back of the place over yonder.
Yeah.
And comes down to that fence line over there.
On this side of the road?
It goes, it's 129 acres on that side of the paved road. Kind of a tree corn place. Mm. Yeah.
Who?
Little George Lightner.
That's a nice old cow right there. Yeah, she's big.
Oh! Oh!
Now she's got a calf and still.
Oh!
And that's good flesh.
I got to get these cows separated. Come on, boy. They can really pick them things up in a hurry. Got a lot of flies here now.
He got a frame. Now that little cow may have big calves in them.
Yeah, she got a nice calf.
Come on account of me being here.
That's it.
Let me get in there.
That's about where I've been.
Just barely see the tracks.
I've put the fence all the way from the house through over yon. I put post in here. And we put post in a half mile over yon, about 200 posts on that line. Still got a lot of posts to go back there. Still need power post in here on this place.
Mm-hmm.
From Americas, some of them from Quitman.
He brought him up there to sale and brought him down?
Yeah. This fellow Wright down here, he has a big feedlot. I believe about 14,000 is operation now.
Hmm.
You can see the top of the barn too, y'all.
Yeah. Have with it.
He charged 25 cents a head for buying them. And 25 cents a 100 pounds for buying them. In other words, a 500 pound steer, he gets $1.25 for buying him.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets 50 cents a whole.
100 pounds. And he brought them in for.
Yeah, he trucks them down here. But you can bet that right he gets the better ones. And
all the time
for the benefit of getting him up to where you can handle him. Now you get out here with fences like this, and it might take you a month to pin this bunch of cows.
Yeah.
And 10 or 15 men, and maybe lose two or three, get him running to death, get him tore up, running through fences. But you can constantly go along with some pellets.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, follow you like a puppy.
Yeah. Now I can take this bunch of cows. Oh, there's some black ones in that bunch, wasn't there? He was counting down y'all. No,
oh,
one black
oh.
One.
Oh, they come from over there.
Yeah, they come from over there.
Yeah, we come, definitely.
I'd like to take another sack, a couple of sacks of these pellets and carry these cows right on. Probably all the way to McIntosh.
Yeah.
Just keep calling and throwing out a few pellets. Well, I told the old man way back on, I said, I need pellets to gentle these cows so I can do something with them. Well, come and buy them, haul them in here. I said, you got to get some pellets here if I'm going to stay with these cows. So he bought 1,000 pounds. It's 20 of them 50-pound bags, and you see what they left there in the barn. And I've got them up to this so where I can just come out here and call them. And here they come. I don't go hunt them.
How
they come
you do hunt
me about 2-3 times a week.
Mm-hmm. They look nice.
There's some darn nice ones. That's a nice Charley there.
Mm-hmm.
Slim. There's some whole lot better ones in here. But if you don't buy, you don't buy like a Ben Shear clip. That's nice, dear.
Yeah.
Yeah, eat him up. That thing ought to have been bigger. That right when they're buying.
You think worms will do that?
Yes, sir. And lice. Oh! Enough. And worms. And not enough milk, too. Now you can see these boys kind of scattering out here and get on the truck and see what they look like. Now that grass right out there. At Pangola, coastal Bermuda mixed in, and that stuff was, you just couldn't get through there with a mowing machine.
Oh, really?
But they have stomped it down, and now I got this field back of these woods here. Well, there's about a 20-acre strip. That's a ditch for that. And that thing is deep, must be 25 feet deep down where you see them trees.
Yeah.
And the other side of that is about a 20-acre patch, and then the other side of that going on up in that corner next to 75 there, there's about 35 acres in that.
Where is 75?
It's right straight over there. Runs. Come this direction.
Is enough room in here to run dogs?
Well,
on this side.
Was that black one I was telling you about?
On this side of 75.
Yeah. He's not coming out, looks like.
Hello. Well, I don't know what he got. He don't talk a whole lot.
He in business over there.
Well, he bought 1,900 acres down here on Palm Beach, developed every bit of it in the village.
Oh.
Subdivided.
Oh.
Built houses on it.
Oh.
And some of his envelopes is Strong Ranch in Texas. And,
Texas?
Yeah. And he told me about having a ranch in New Mexico, and said he had a lot of goats out there. Said he was thinking strongly about getting, said he had Angoria goats out there. But he said that he wouldn't want Angoria here, that he would want just a good common or wood goat here to help eat out the brush.
Well, no wonder he don't get here very much. He's got to go to them other places, too.
And he said something about ranch he had in Oklahoma. Whether he still got them or not, I don't know. But he got so much to talk about when he gets here. And he has such little time until he just don't get around to these distance things. He's a businessman.
Yeah.
Seems to be an awful fine old man. Just but he don't seem to know much about ranching and cattle. I think he just goes out and buys it, walks off and leaves it, and lets somebody else look after it. I imagine that his biggest thing is just the investment. He bought that 1,900 acres down yonder and developed it. And he's got these payments coming. And if he tucks it away in the bank, why, the government takes so much of it for income.
Mm-hmm.
But if he keeps investing it, well, he can get around paying his tax.
Mm-hmm.
This little old museum, art museum here in Gainesville, tell me the man saved $1 million on that thing.
What do you mean?
I mean, well, he just saved $1 million. He's making enough money. Not the man that's really got the business, but there's a lawyer with him. And he makes his money. And he show this little old art he's got up there. And he get the art association to appraise it at a high price, see? It don't matter how much you appraise that, he give it away. See? Well, when he gives away $1 million worth of art, well, it takes $1 million off of his income. And he ain't paid enough for the stuff to start with. But he give away $1 million, so that takes $1 million off his income.
Huh? What museum?
It's valued at $1 million.
What museum you talking about?
This old three-story brick building here in Micanopy.
Oh, in Micanopy,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a man, well, he don't live too far from here. He drives, buys a new Cadillac every year. And he's a great friend of him. In fact, he tours the United States with him. And this lawyer does most of the driving. He don't like to drive. And he says that lawyer is an expert driver. And they just tour about over the United States and up in Canada. He was telling me about it, said that he could save $1 million on this little art gallery here in Gaines in Micanopy by getting this stuff appraised high and then giving it away.
Let's turn it up.
Figure. You got to outfigure the other fellow.
Yeah.
You can't ever figure to be real honest with a man and make a lot of money. There ain't no way in the world to live with the Bible and have a lot of money.
Well, that doesn't necessarily follow. What you're saying is you just got to figure that it doesn't all come with hard work.
Yeah, it don't all come with hard work. Well,
now you see, we had brought up the wrong way. I always figured.
You know, that's a nice steer right there.
Yeah, pretty steer.
That's a pretty steer right there.
Yeah.
He's way up something. I bet he's put on 100 pounds since he's been here in the last, probably 5 weeks he's been here. Mm-hmm. Well, back to that bush where that black cow the white tail is.
Mm-hmm.
You can see there, you can see this graded road. It comes in over yon. Now, see those pines there? Back to that oak.
Mm-hmm.
There's a gate right there. I can go out onto that grazed road, and then it goes on back up in yon, and then back down in the head of timber back in yon. And well, out there, you can see this back corner, two different places, and that all the way back to the back side. See those, that old big, I believe it's a white oak cow, and then there's a low one, kind of a flat top in between it.
Mm-hmm.
See them pine trees in the back over there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this goes right back out of them trees. It don't go to these others that you see to the left of this pine back over there. It corners before you get there and comes into the barn. Don't quite go over before you see back in there. I'll make a call, Coleman. I go every now and then. A lot of them know I turn down.
I haven't seen them
today. If one wire moves, the other moves, up or down, either way.
Yeah. And that's just as good as a post.
Well, it's not quite as good as a post, but see, it's got that coil there. And you push it right up, and your coil will come out. Your loop pins against this wire and comes over there. And then you got this straight wire that sticks right down there.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's got a loop on the top. It can't fall on through.
Mm-hmm.
And it ties those wires together where if he pushes a wire up or down, the others go with it. He ain't
mm-hmm.
opening it, spreading the two wires apart.
Did you put them on?
No.
Is that on already?
He needs about 5,000 of them here on this
place.
Yeah, they come over here and get this grass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they will a calf.
Yeah, calf go right through there.
I had a darn yearling looked. That ain't him, but he looked just about like that red one there.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of when I had him over in here and on back to the house. Why, he got through somewhere, I don't know where, and right at the end of this fence, which is, well, about 3/8 of a mile over there of that grade, he got back down there, and I tried to get around the Jeep, and he ran down that bottom down on that thicket. Well, he come back out of there. Got up on the hill and got over yon. He went down that bottom. Finally got him headed back over this way. Thought he was going to give him the Jeep. Kind of working me again. That's kind of sad. He just wanted to run over us, Jeep and all. And he went back down that thicket. So I didn't run. I don't run one. If he won't go, that nice little steer there walking out. Nice, nice hands. You just can't run cows fences like you got out here. Fudge bulldozed this place out pretty well. And
if it don't grow up again, you'll mow it.
They didn't
keep this mowed, won't you?
Level it. And there's lots of holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it'll settle anyhow where you bulldoze and push soft dirt in. She had a deal win for watermelons. But the problem is here, it'd actually be better for the old man. There's a few treetops on it where they've cut some timber. But it'd be cheaper on him to rent it and let the man tear it up good and clean them tops off and put fertilizer to it, he'd come out better in the long run. He would just get out there and mow it and fertilize itself. Look at him. He has two more. See him back there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're gaining now. You're in the velvet now.
Yeah. Them could have walked off that far. I don't believe they have.
I don't believe they have.
Oh, hello. Oh. The government. He could go and always just run off a spiel of numbers that long. Somebody asked him, I said, Neagle says, how in the world can you always remember these figures? He says, oh, hell, said, you don't pay no attention to figures. Says, nobody can prove them nohow. Now you just give them a figure. Just give them a figure. Yeah. They couldn't prove it nohow. But if you had to stop and fall and fool around and scratch your head about it, you think, well, he's lying.
Yeah.
Man, just did. Well, his wife come up here after he remodeled that old house, and she give him a fit about it.
Oh.
The bathroom being so big and the bedroom so small, he got twin beds in each room there.
Yeah.
And she says, my furniture don't fit in there, so you just go buy some more.
Yeah.
And he had tore that thing up, that thing just died.
Yeah.
And I had to jump in here and cut them things down and saw it all up, clean it up. Oh, Carl Air place. He was a tax assessor here years ago.
Yeah.
And he sold, I don't know how many times it's been sold. This fellow by the name of Yancey bought this thing. He was a road contractor, and he had bunch of girls, and they was up high school and college age, and he spending worlds of money on them in cars and college and cocktail parties, and he kind of went down the road business and tried to farm here, and he didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
He sold it, and it's been sold several times. Futch, he bought it. And he kept it for about 20 years. He cut lots of timber off of it.
At Yancey?
Futch. Old Judge Futch.
Judge Futch.
Yeah. Judge Futch's brother, my father, was first judge.
Oh.
How much was that? $275,000.
Well, now, was all this in one piece when he bought it?
Yeah. The old deed turned in one piece.
Well, who got it all together?
Well, Futch. Futch had it all.
He
Futch
got
had it
all
together.
Yeah. Well, was and Futch sold it to this man.
Yeah, Futch had owned most of this for 20 years.
I see.
Now he's added on some little patches. Another one from Delray Beach, right up on that tall timber, had 28 acres, and he finally bought that. Now, this, right up here on the way, you see those pine trees, there's a big old pond there. There must be 10 or 12 acres in it. And there's a lot of mud in it. But you can take along a kind of fishing pole, just push it right on down there. You don't find no bottom. Now, that just scrub oak. That out there was scrub oak. But it's got good grass there,
mm-hmm.
but the fence is down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I had all that fence up in shape, why, I'd like to run this bunch of cattle out and run them over there for about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Just rest this over here?
Just rest that and get that down. There ain't a bit of sense in having to mow it when you can put them cows in there and let them take it.
Oh,
down.
They're better mowers than you are.
They're better mowers, and you're getting some profit out of it. It costs you money to mow the mowing machine.
Oh, it does.
But, a lot of that old scrub oak out on there, I can go just about any place out there with that mowing machine and mow that stuff down. And I tell him if he'd get the right kind of tractor in there and dig that place up, he can go all the way back to them tall pines you see back on if he wanted to. And up to that most of that tall timber on it. He'd get all the watermelons he wanted in there, and he could water from that pond.
Mm-hmm. What's Bill Wynn's object in doing all those melons?
Well, I think he's made money on this year. There's out the back there. Well, I put just nearly 7 tons of fertilizer on that 4.5 acres. Mm-hmm. And the first scrapping over and the second cutting, Bob told me that they had done cut over 50,000 pounds there. And them melons went for 2.5 cents.
That's as high as they got? Forward.
Well, they may have got more than that, but they got money out of them melons. Mm-hmm. Now, a cent and a quarter.
Now, they just...
A cent a pound, 3/4 cent. Well, like this labor situation there, you got to have about a cent a pound mm-hmm. to break even.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get that other 0.5 cent, 3/4 cent on the pound...
It goes up fast.
Buddy, it goes up fast. Yeah. 50,000 pounds on a little 4.5 acre patch. Mm-hmm. And they done cut it 3 or 4 or 5 times since then. I don't know how many times.
So you think he's in it just because he makes something out of it?
All right, he's in it because he makes something out of it.
Well, look, I go down that store. Don't look like they're selling a thing. Nobody care much about buying anything. Just quiet, you know. Well, they do just this season, yeah, they just farm.
Well, you'd be surprised at the amount of stuff they do sell, though. Yes, sir. They got some little customers like you, but the stuff that I buy for other people have for a number of years. There has been some years that the stuff that I bought for other people runs high $20,000. And if they make 20% profit on that, that's $200 on every thousand, ain't it? And 20,000, that's $4,000 profit.
Just one account.
Stuff that I... More money than I make. Of course, when I go down there to buy something, I get it for the right price, and when I'm selling stuff for other people, I get something out of it. They always give me a commission on it. You know, when you pay amounts for anything, mm-hmm. buy the little stuff. Now, like these things that I let you have there with them valves, and they bill to you through the store. You got a bill on that?
Didn't.
It happens you will in a few days. Them bushings, that little old valve priced right on that, but them bushings, why, they buy them things about 20 cents cheaper than what I bought them. But they didn't have them down there.
Mm-hmm.
I need them.
Well, with the store, too.
They couldn't afford to keep it open if they did. They can't keep 3 or 4 bookkeepers around there just to say that they're keeping up with the debt they got. Yeah. Take that Ross Rass wife in there all the time. And Bill, he's keeping books. Henry, he works in books. And there's Phillips. She don't work there anymore, but she has. They have had 4 there at the time.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of stuff that I keep.
Well, just keeping the inventory.
Spring, you sell it in Gainesville. You sell it all the way to Palatka. I've known of just worlds of stuff going to Leesburg, to Brooksville, to Williston, to Dunellen.
How did they do that?
Well, man comes in, buys, and they deliver it to him. Some of them just call up and send me so and so.
Well, why would they call here if
You mean people from down at Dunnelly?
Yeah.
Oh, that doesn't sound reasonable.
Well, it's that way. Man called up from Ocala. Been, about 7-8 years ago now. And wanted price on some lumber. Asked him how much, Bill, how much discount. Bill said, I can't give you no discount. He says, well, he says, I'm going to build 4 or 6 houses. And said, I'm looking for a man to give me a good discount. Says, whoever can, I'm buying material from. And he says, Marion Hardware here, they got the best price. And so they give me 5% on everything. It's, they priced to me at $125 a thousand, number 2 framing, and 5% discount on it. Bill said, well, hell, but I can't give you no discount. He says, I'll sell you one bolt or a carload at $110 a thousand. Well, what good is his discount, 5% discount off $125, when he can buy it for $110 without discount?
Well, how did Bill do that?
Well, they don't buy until the price is right. Old man W. Christian said there ain't nothing in selling. So your profit's all in buying. So if you don't buy right, you can't sell right.
And you think that's what he's doing?
That's what they've always done. They used to buy with, there's a hardware place in Leesburg, there's one in Dunnell, and one in Williston. And Christian would buy 5 carloads of hardware at one time sometime and split it up. And maybe some of it he carried over 2 years. But he had bought it at a price that he still could make a profit on it by the quantity lots that he bought it in.
You mean when he was here?
Yeah.
He still had those other stores?
No, he didn't have them other stores. He just called these fellows up. Now, I can,
oh, I see.
If you handle this stuff and take so much off me, he could sell it to them cheaper than they could buy it because they didn't have the money to buy a carload,
mm-hmm.
or half a carload.
Mm-hmm.
But they could take enough off of him that it didn't leave him overloaded. He could make a profit off of what he sold to him,
mm-hmm.
and get his at a price, and he could make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
You have to use your heads.
Yeah.
Can't be like the old nigger. Went to the doctor. So you have to give him a shot. So roll up the sleeve and give him a shot in the arm. So no, doctor, so you can't give me no shot in my arm. See, I have to work with my arm. He said, well, pull up the bitch and give you a shot in the leg. He said, no, doctor, so I have to walk a long ways to work. I can't have my legs shake. He said, well, pull down your britches, I'll give you a shot in the rump. I said, no, doc, says, when he gets tired, he has to sit down and rest. Doc says, you have to go on home and die. He says, I don't know place you don't use. He said, doc, said, give it to me in my head. He didn't use his head.
I figure.
I paid $300 for it last year.
Yeah, but you just lucky and got a good
find. The man said he had put a new motor in it, but I'm satisfied he had. I thought it was in worse shape than it was. And it gets away with some oil, but it's leaking out. But it ain't leaking out bad enough to tear it down and work on it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
No more than you drive, you don't have to worry about that.
Shoot, I get 27 miles on a gallon.
That's good. And then you got a place for all your plunder.
Yeah, and 7 miles and enough other stuff, you can get a whole lot of tractor.
Well, I hadn't been able to.
Well, I got one. It's still running. And you have seen it work.
Yeah. The hell, I go round up there. That street.
$500 to $1,200, one of these little bit old cubs like Bob had up there.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
And you probably spend another $1,000 to pay off.
That's right.
First year.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah, I've shopped around right smart for a second. I Yeah, and
I give so much for a tractor. It don't matter what the tractor is, just what's a tractor.
Yeah. That's right. Now that's the way it is with a horse, you see. That helps us both, you see.
Yeah.
So if you just keep things moving, that's a whole lot better.
Well, with this little 2 acres and much house and yard I got there, I ain't gonna need for a tractor. Just not enough farming going on to get out and do custom work.
Oh, no.
And people with a place like this, he ain't going to go out and rent a tractor. He's going to go buy one.
Yeah.
That's the thing this old man needs to do is buy two.
Yeah.
Brand new ones.
Yeah.
If he's going to keep this thing.
Yeah.
But now he's got this. You see a sign right down the road there. Roger's Reality. Maybe two between here and 75 down there.
Uh-huh.
And this piece back there beside that grade yard. Roger was right here the other day. This United Farm Agency woman was with him. And she had a prospect. I told Roger, I said, the old man ain't ever said anything about sell this. He said, he said it.
Yeah.
He said it.
Yeah. But it, you know, a lot of times I found it's easier to buy or sell. Buy a piece of land like this, a little 10-acre farm.
Yeah.
Park
if you got stuff over there that you got to have a whole lot of cash for, I can't cut the cash price of mine down to nothing because it don't put us on equal.
Don't give you anything to work on.
We got to get together where we'll both be happy and be able to both host a profit from it.
Yeah.
That'll be.
Well,
I figured on planting down here in Flemington. As long as I got the tractor, I ain't gonna let it just sit there and rust out. I'm gonna use that piece. And, but I ain't got a business to run there. I got too much of it.
Yeah.
It's a big lesson.
It's a big deal, too.
Yeah. This lesson comes a lot terribly brought out in this lesson, but it does go along with this lesson in generality and the fulfillment, the things that we must believe if we believe any part of it. War that's going on in the Middle East. You might say they have just laid out. The book says, when the sun goeth down, all of man's work done. And they've just, they've done their work. They've taken their night's rest now, but they'll come back. And before this is over, we'll have lots of clarification of the things in the past, the things in the future, and to bring out the fulfillment of what the prophecies give us. Really, I'm not prepared to teach this lesson. It's too wide scope of it for my narrow brain. The title of it, Churches Reach Out. But I think the main emphasis should be how far are we reaching?
Not many of us are reaching out there for.
No. Or at least we're not reaching in the right direction. Just not reaching far enough in the right direction. We've got one arm extended one way and one the other.
Well, it has to do with the different empires that has come and gone, and how they had went out to preach, and the different churches, the different versions of what had been done up to that time, and what is to come. But now there were the church that was at Antioch, certain prophets and teachers, Barnabas and Simon, that were called Niger, and Lucius of Cyrene, the man in which had been brought up with Herod to Tetrarch, and Saul. They ministered to the Lord and fasted. The Holy Ghost said, "Separate me, Barnabas and Saul, for the work whereunto I have called them." And when they had fasted, prayed and laid the hands upon them, they sent them away. Now there's a lot of us that hasn't been sent away. We prayed a little bit, we fasted, and looks like we've laid back down for that second nap. We haven't gone on out to do our work that was set out for us to do. When the Jews had gone out of the synagogue, the Gentiles besought that the words might be preached to them the next Sabbath. Now when the congregation was broken up, many of the Jews and the religious proselytes followed Paul and Barnabas, who speak to them, persuaded them to continue in the grace of God. In the summary of the student book, I think we get that from the summary of the lesson, is the things that we are doing today, which is not all the things we should do. We're going along with the world too much and just kind of letting these other things slip by. That the next Sabbath day came almost the whole city together to hear the word of God. But when the Jews saw the multitudes, they were filled with envy and spake against these things which were spoken by Paul, contradicting and blaspheming. Then Paul and Barnabas waxed bold and said, "It was necessary that the word of God should first have been spoken to you, but ye seeing put it from you, and judge yourselves unworthy of everlasting life. Lo, we turn to the Gentiles. For so hath the Lord commanded us, saying, I have set thee to be light of the Gentiles, that thou should be for salvation unto the ends of the earth." They went out and preached, and but they had thorns in the sides, a number of thorns. And they had to get away from these thorns. Now we've got thorns in our sides, self-inflicted thorns. That's the ones that hurts worse. If you get one stuck in and you get a finger, you know you got to get it out. But that self-infliction is that, well, I'll put it there, it's my business to pull it out when I get ready, and it's going to have to get hurt me a little worse before I'm going to take it out. Your conscience is bothering you all along the line, but it just doesn't knock you out to where you either completely change when you wake up, or you still down in the gutter and don't care. I heard a sermon this morning about a service that one of the good members went up and told the preacher, says, "We got one of the worst men in the world here in our congregation this morning. An old man up in his 80s. He says, says, why, he's committed all kind of crimes. Says he's killed 3 men. And he says he's in the back down there, was preaching rather out in the open. And the old man came back the second night. And the third night, when they called for people to come up and join the church, live for Christ, well, the old man got up and walked out. And they were very much disturbed about this old man coming in and his going out, and they just didn't know what was might be fixing to take place. Maybe he's going to come in and murder a bunch of them or something. But, so they had gathered at the church, and here came the old man to a fence out there, and he cried out. He says, well, he's done it. He's done it. It's happened. And he got up on the fence, and he saw it said, it's happened. And he come on over, and he says, I don't know how that the Lord has done it, but says he has saved me. He says, I went home on the left chair, says I couldn't stand it. Says I went home and says I couldn't sleep all night. And in the morning, says it bothered me so that I got my cotton sack and went out in the field to pick cotton. And says I picked some cotton, and he says it just bothered me so. Says I fell down on my face on that cotton sack and prayed. And says, I have got up and come back here. Says, the Lord has saved me. Says, I don't know how you've saved a man like me. Well, we can take off and we can run from these things, but if the pressure is great enough and we want to go along with it, well, we can make a change, which lots of us do need to make some drastic changes. Some of us only need minor changes. I heard another preacher this morning saying that in the congregations throughout the country, there were too many people who said, well, I've got a good son. He's a good boy. He doesn't do this and that and the other. He's just a fine boy. But he hasn't ever crossed that fence and said, God has saved me and I am with him from here on out. He's just a good boy, but he's still on the other side of the fence. He hasn't got on the right side, and that's the big thing that's ailing the country today. We haven't got on the right side of the fence.
Well, maybe the church is not reaching out and getting these people.
Well, it is the church's place, in the summary, in your adult lesson for the day, I think it tells you that the people in the church should kind of reach out for that purpose. That, let's see what it does say. It says, the 13th chapter of Acts has introduced us as a great church at Antioch of Syria, after their own faith has firmly established by the teachings of Barnabas and Saul, the church at Antioch Ark was eager to share its faith with others. They moved across Cyprus and then northwest on the Asian mainland to a general constituency. Until the World War II, the church operated at the assumption that it had a firm base in the West from which it sent missionaries to Asia and Africa. But today, in many European countries, less than 25% of the people are related to the church. In America, every community has a considerable segment which cares nothing for Christian faith, and every congregation has the world is increasingly a secular society, that it is one which makes its decision without reference to God. You just stop to think about the many decisions that you make without any reference to God, to Christianity, of what you're going to do in society. And society is one of the most corrupt things. some of the highest talked about people today, like Elizabeth Taylor. I don't think they could get any more corrupt. But yet, there's more people that mention Elizabeth Taylor's name than any other one person, I imagine. Unless it might be Martin Luther King or Lyndon B. Johnson, but she still probably is top on the list, because there's a lot of people that's not concerned whatever about politics, but they are concerned about the ways of life as long as they're going with this world away. Now, there's just not a lot of people going the godly way. Most people go the worldly way.
Well, how are you going to sort of get yourself disentangled from that social way of thinking, you know, and sort of clear your mind? I think that's a thing that worries me so much.
Get old, I reckon.
It's not altogether that. Now let me tell you. Yesterday, you see, we were out there late, out there on counting those cows. A whole lot of them coming from all directions just kept coming up as long as we stayed out there.
Yeah.
Well, it seemed to me the things out there were sort of clear, and I didn't have anything nagging at me, worried. Now, I noticed in here, let me tell you, I read this thing last Sunday. I didn't have anything else to do. And this thing's been bothering me in connection with the... news.
Get it out.
In connection with the news on the television. You know, the other day, the Arabs, I call them Arabs privately, but I guess you'd call them Arabs, and the Jews got together there for the first time in Jerusalem. And the Arabs went over into a section of Jerusalem where they hadn't been before, and the thing of it was, they liked it. They got along fine. At least it presented that way. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Well, now let me tell you. NASA won't like that. Now, he'll get the word out over there, and he'll send his representatives, and they'll start just inciting them. You see, the word there is inciting them.
Well, on the television last night, it showed them marching down the street, and it said that they had all been notified to be prepared in a moment's notice, that the people didn't know what was actually going, but there was preparations, everything was a hustle and bustle. They didn't exactly know what was going. But now NASA asked for the peace mission forces, United Forces, to be drawn back from their lines, taken out the country, and just as quick as it did, they jumped on to these errors, and they have tore them up. And the Bible, in was it Monday's paper?
Wednesday's
paper. There's a piece in there, and it tells you all the chapters. It's in Ezekiel, mostly, wasn't it? Where just these exact things, when you get your Bible and read it, everything that's happened over there during this 6-day period, you find every bit of it right there in the Bible. It's like it's happened. And there's another sermon that I was listening at this morning. It says that this thing has not come yet, near about close, that according to the Bible. Now, they wouldn't preach it for what just happened over there. But it did, was right connected, page to page there, so to speak. This thing wasn't going to clear up until all the countries could get in there. Now, that's what the Israelites, or Jews, is off to do, is to make it an open city to everybody. They have annexed it. Well, NASA don't like it. The Arabs don't like it. The Jordanians don't like it. They all want the territory that they've had so that they can rule it. But the Israelites, they have off to make it an open city to everybody, so that everybody can go there and see the places that of holy worship in the past and keep it a shrine for the Lord. But a lot of them, they want to just say, well, now you can't come in here today. You can't go yonder. You got to stay away from it. This is our business, not the Lord, so to speak. Well, The book tells us that the Jews is God's chosen people, and in our last day here, it seemed like that there's a bunch of the Jews that wasn't willing to live up. Barnabas and Paul, they went out to preach, and they went over and they landed on one side and taken off. One place they had the blindness. Another place they had malaria. And they had to get clear of these thorns in their side that before they could carry their work on efficiently. Well, now, we might think we're doing very efficient in the earnings that we are making today and the automobiles that we're able to buy and drive, the clothes we can wear. But if we had that thorn out of our side, we might feel a whole lot better than just a pair of old blue down overalls, chamber shirt, straw hat.
This book of Ezekiel, it'll to be restored. There's just lots of this good reading here that's proven to come to pass in the book of Ezekiel.
Yeah, it says that all this 6 day war here, that the Israel was to be favored by the Lord for this thing all the way through. Now they talk about stopping it and making them give back all that they've taken. Well, they have been run out of there. They don't have a homeland anymore, you might say. And the Lord, so the Bible says, is to favor them. Well, now, if they haven't favored them, they just don't. The whole world, it's just like you see a baby. He's crawled on the floor there. He's crawled on the floor. And he's pulled up, and he gets about halfway up, and he fall over and roll over on his back, and you think, well, now, will he ever walk? I would just love to see him walk one time. And all at once, he'd just get up on his feet and take off and run. It's some amazing just to see the change that can be made so sudden. And according to the Bible there, this change is taking place right now. It's one of those very, very sudden changes that will be very far-reaching that will, when its course is run, we'll have more peace throughout the whole world. People have got to learn to live with one another.
Do you think the church now, has reached out and got that?
Huh?
Do you think the church has reached out and got that to have more peace? That the church has had anything to help out by getting people to have a more peaceable world?
Well, the church does have a great deal to do with it, G.P., but you can't look at it just from the church standpoint. You've got to look at it from the Bible standpoint. The prophecy says that these things will come. Now, there's too many people today, they don't pay no attention whatever to the prophecy. They say, well, I'm going to go on and do as I please that this old world has been here for a million years, it'll be here another million. But the things that's been happening in this century is some of the fastest fulfillments of the Bible that has been. Now, the fulfillments up until the 20th century has been very slow. But there has been some things that's been fast in the past. But the thing is, the news hasn't been what it should have been. As the Irishman came over here, and they were telling him about the wonderful ways of communication, the telegraph and the telephone, and the old Irishman says, yes, you've got the telegraph and the telephone, but said, if you want the news, to go tell the woman. Well, now, there's not enough women and men that's told one another. They go and turn the radio off, and they don't look at they're not a telegraph operator, so they're not getting the news. You've got to get out and tell one another.
Could I take a little different tack?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Take two of them. Drive one both directions.
All right, now give me just a minute.
Yeah, 3 minutes.
Now, I'm not going to talk about prophecy. I'm going to talk about something else. Paul cited Isaiah to say that Jesus would be a light unto the Gentiles, or something like that. Now, that is the light that he followed, that he would carry the word to the Gentiles, and he carried the Jews too. And the chief thorn in the flesh he had, as it's presented in Acts, is the Jews. See, when I look at you, don't look down to the floor. Just look at me. Let me talk to you. Good God Almighty. I don't look down the floor when you talk to me, Caesar.
Got the bronze legs.
Let me tell you. That was a thorn in the flesh as it presented in Acts. The Jews incited the people against Paul and made it hard on him.
Yeah.
Now what I wanted to do was just bring this analogy that Nasser is inciting the Arabs now against somebody else, and there's just no chance of going forward, of being a light unto anybody. Now let me tell you. Yesterday we were standing out there and that looking over that whole prospect there, and there was no thorn in my flesh at that time. And it seems to me like, you know, that things look clear. Well, as I went home last night, I kept thinking about that. If I could just be, and I thought about Paul. Now, you see, Paul had an object in mind, and he was moving. He went from one place to another. And when he got there, he had something to talk to the people about. It was just as clear as it could be, and there was no doubt about it, you see. You might not believe it, but it was clear, something that they could follow. Now, let me tell you, you get in a position in society, you know, everybody gets, you get all cramped. You get in a position where you don't see straight. You don't have that whole countryside there to look at and see your cattle coming up and be able to count them. The little things get in your mind. Now, let me tell you, I read this lesson in the International Quarterly. It had several comments on it. One of them was that little point there, Acts says that these people believed. Those who were elected believed. Now, you see, I don't think Paul, in his position at that time, would make any great point of whether or not you have to be elected in order to believe. But somebody who's not going anywhere, he just studied the book and hadn't got anything else to do, sort of reads it along with his coffee for breakfast. You say, now, I got something there. You can't believe until you're elected. Well, it looks to me like that's a small point. And you can just get you can just get all wrapped up in small points. Well, there's no way of knowing. You don't know when you're elected or anything like that. That's right. Now, what I'm saying, that's all I'm saying. But you know, that's sort of been in my mind. If you can just keep moving along, you won't stop on these cranky points. You see, what you'll do, you'll be carrying the word. You just be carrying the plain, unmitigated word that there is Jesus and His message. And there's no ifs and ands about it. Now, I think my trouble is, you see, I'm a bookish man. I think my trouble is I look for them small points. I want to interpret Paul's big word in the light of these little bitty old words. And I don't think that's right.
You don't mean to say you condemn yourself.
And when I go to town, I'm worse at that than I am when I come out in the country. I
see, well, she has probably found that out. Didn't she? Kind of looking down, she's a little ashamed of you this morning. I'm glad you brought that out, because you know there's lots of us, man and wife, that's in that same position. We find that we are a little crankish, and that our point doesn't fit like we thought it did. Now, if everybody could just take the Bible out and open it up there.
Yeah.
Look in there and see what it says, and look up in the mirror. Just look direct into his own eyes for 5 minutes and look at himself.
Yeah.
and try to keep
there would be some big changes.
And try to keep to the main point.
Yeah.
Yes. I'll get off on the little.